Sunny.
Hello, Yeheyas.
Sunny, I understand you have kudos for Connecticut basketball.
Yeheyas, here's a sunny side of sports salute to the Huskies of Connecticut, who beat the Wildcats of Kentucky Monday night 60-54 to win their fourth NCAA men's basketball championship. NCAA championship record crowd of 79,238. Watch the game at AT&T Stadium near Dallas, Texas. Among the dignitaries in attendance were the past two U.S. presidents, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. Connecticut senior point guard Shabazz Napier scored a game-high 22 points and was voted the most outstanding player of the Final Four.
It's definitely a sweet feeling because, you know, we've been to a lot of dogfights, and to understand that each player knows what to do, when to do it, and it just comes from our experience. And it's definitely a special feeling knowing that, you know, we push each other so hard to get this.
This was Shabazz Napier's second national title. He was a freshman or first-year player on the Huskies when they won their last national championship in 2011. Connecticut also won the trophy in 1999 and 2004. This title, though, is being described as the team's most improbable, coming just 1 year after it served a one-year NCAA ban from the postseason tournament, because its players fell short of minimal academic standards. Connecticut forward DeAndre Daniels, who had 8 points and 6 rebounds Monday night, says it was a very motivated Huskies team that won the championship.
It's the drive that we have, and just wanting it more. I feel like nobody wanted to win as badly as we wanted to win. Like I said earlier, this team just was built off heart and hard work, and just going out there every day and just giving it our all and playing together and playing UConn basketball and just having fun at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, Connecticut basketball fans might be having more fun. That's because later Tuesday night, Connecticut's women's team also plays for the national title. The Huskies will take on the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame in the championship women's game in the southern U.S. city of Nashville, Tennessee. It marks the first time two unbeaten women's teams have played for the trophy. Connecticut has won all 38 of its games this season, while Notre Dame is 37-0. In pro boxing, the big bout this week is a welterweight rematch Saturday night between Manny Pacquiao of the Philippines and Timothy Bradley of the United States. The fight will take place at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, and at stake will be Bradley's WBO welterweight title. When the two boxers met in 2012 at the same venue, Bradley scored a controversial split decision victory. Many boxing fans, including yours truly, thought Pac-Man had easily won the fight. Since then, Bradley has beaten the Russian Ruslan Provotnikov, as well as the Mexican Juan Manuel Marquez. Meanwhile, since his loss to Bradley, Pac-Man got knocked out by Marquez, but then bounced back to beat American Brandon Rios by unanimous decision. Timothy Bradley is trained by the former Mexican title holder, Joel Diaz.
He's very, very sharp. He's very strong. And I'm not going to say much because it's going to be a surprise, but I guarantee you guys, you're going to see a different Bradley, because the strategy for this fight is similar to the first, but the changes that we made, that we added to it, are different. You guys are going to see a different Bradley with more confidence and a better mentality for this fight. Timothy's been in the ring with him before, so we know. He already felt Manny. And like he says, coach, he's fast, but he don't hit as hard as Ruslan Provodnikov. If Ruslan couldn't hurt me, I don't think Manny can. And the strategy for this fight is a very important one. Like he says, I just need to follow the strategy, and there is no way Manny can beat me.
Manny Pacquiao feels like he beat Timothy Bradley in their first fight. When the decision was announced in Las Vegas, the crowd let out a chorus of boos, and the Pac-Man's promoter, Bob Arum, described the judges as the three blind mice. For his part, Bradley believes he never gained the recognition he was due after beating Pacquiao.
I need the credit from the fans. I need the credit from the boxing world. I need the credit from the media. Beating Manny Pacquiao the first time around, I didn't get that. This is what this is about for me. And the only thing I'm worried about is just getting in there and taking care of business and winning the fight in good fashion.
That's World Boxing Organization welterweight champion Timothy Bradley talking about his upcoming rematch on Saturday night against Manny Pacquiao.
I'm Manny Pacquiao, the fighter from the Philippines. When I start boxing, I'm inspired to fight because of my family. We're very poor. When I'm in training for the big fight, I train hard. Get up in the morning, 6 o'clock, jogging, 1 hour. After that, rest. I go to the gym, we do training. Sometimes I want more. I train hard. I used to train in karate. Right now, I'm inspired to fight for the honor of my country.
Our Daybreak Africa sportsman Marco Uma joins us now with an update on Ghana's national football team, the World Cup-bound Black Stars.
Ghana football coach James Kwesi Appiah is full of praise for the Ghana Football Association allowing him the latitude to handle his job without interference, Appiah told the Accra media. Meanwhile, Ghana Football Association President Kwesi Nyantaji pointing out how the just-concluded CAF FIFA seminar in Johannesburg, South Africa, is of constructive value to Ghanaian football.
This is about the structure for football associations. It looks at the key personnel that we need to run an effective football administration, and this includes the technical director, the general secretary, the president, and the roles that they are supposed to play to complement each other's effort. We have discussed and shared a lot of experiences here, and we've learned a lot that will go a long way to improve the running of football back home in Ghana.
Now, everyone is looking at the Black Stars going to the World Cup. I wouldn't want to delve too much into the allowances and how they are being paid. How is the preparation getting ready? I want to look at the overall, which is more important.
Okay, the preparation for the team is on course. It started right after our qualification to the World Cup, so the coaches have been going around monitoring players and evaluating their performances with their club size, also engaging their coaches and technical handlers and managers on how to motivate and get the best out of these players. Just last 2 weeks, we also sent our entire technical team on attachment to England. They were with the League Managers Association, Liverpool Football Club, and so forth and so on, where a lot of learning points were made there. They shared experiences, also learned a lot from how a professional club and professional football is managed and run. Now, we're coming back home, and we expect that at the end of the European football season, we'll have our players around the 18th, and then we'll do a non-residential camping session in Accra. Then the team will travel to Rotterdam, camp there for a few days before playing Holland on 31st of May. Then on 1st of June, the team travels to the United States to play one more opponent before the coach concentrates on sharpening the rough edges of the team towards the World Cup. So by the 12th of June, the team will be in Brazil, ready to play the first game on the 16th of June.
That was Kwesi Nyantaji, president of Ghana Football Association, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Thanks, Mark. That's our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Marco Uma, reporting from Johannesburg. Meanwhile, Ghanaian great Abede Pele had reason to be proud over the weekend, as we hear now from our African football guru, David Legg.
That's right, Sonny. Not one of his sons, but two of them have been on the goal spree in France. André scoring a hat-trick for Marseille, and Jordan, the younger brother of André, scoring for Sochaux. So 4 goals altogether for the Ayew family. André, his hat-trick came against rock-bottom Ajaccio, and it gave Marseille a 3-1 victory and their first success since the end of February. So a very welcome victory indeed. Jordan, he scored for Sochaux, who are battling against relegation. Unfortunately, although they went 2 up at Bastia, eventually they had to settle for a 2-2 draw. But high fives then for the Ayew brothers, both of whom will be hoping to be in the Ghana squad for the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. If we switch now to England, and a very familiar name, Yaya Toure of Manchester City. He converted a penalty after initiating the move that led to a foul on David Silva, and Manchester City went on to beat Southampton 4-1. Mohamed Salah, the Egyptian, and a recent addition to the staff at Chelsea, did not score, but he created two of the three goals in a 3-0 victory over Stoke City. Plenty of African goals in the Spanish La Liga. Richmond Boyacá, a Ghanaian, he scored for Elche in a 1-0 victory over Getafe in a relegation battle. Nouredine Amrabat, a Moroccan who's at Malaga, he scored in a 4-1 thrashing of Granada. And the Granada goal came from somebody whose name is now becoming a regular feature on the sunny side of sport. That's Youssef El Arabi. This was his 12th goal of the season, but certainly not the happiest of goals because his side went down by 4-1. Yet another African on target in Spain was Stefan Mbia at Sevilla. And good news for him, too, because Sevilla won 4-1 against Espanyol. No goals for Givino, the Ivory Coast magician who plays for Roma in Italy, but he created two of the three goals as Roma won 3-1 away at Cagliari. And unfortunately, in Germany, no goal scorers to report either. But the highlight of the weekend then for Africa in Europe, undoubtedly the Ayew brothers, a hat-trick for Andre and one goal for Jordan.
And David, here's another high five for the Ayew brothers after their big weekend in France. And our African football guru, David Legg, will be back later this week with more.